You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Robert Lee and John Hawksworth.
Hello, welcome to the Race to Dubai show as Nicholas Coulsarts wins his first European Tour title in 7 years at the Amundi Open de France.
I've been coming here for so long and missed out a bunch of times, and to do it here, to do it like this, where at the end it was pretty dramatic, you know, makes it even better.
The Belgian will join us later in the show as we review all the action from Paris, and we'll also preview the next event on the European Tour, the Portugal Masters. Hello, I'm Robert Lee, and I'm joined today by former European Tour legend John Hawksworth. Johnny, how are you?
Yeah, no, nice to see you. I haven't seen you for a while. Gosh, you've aged.
I know. It's like looking in the mirror, John, isn't it?
It is.
And Matt Cooper, golf journalist, golf writer. How are you, Matt?
I'm fine, thank you.
Yeah, did you enjoy the French Open?
Yeah. I'm quite fond of golf when it's played in windy, cold weather. I think two of my favourite tournaments this year were the Oman Open and the Qatar Masters. And more of the same this weekend. Big numbers possible. I always think it makes a more entertaining final round.
Are you a big fan, John, of Le Golf National?
Oh, yes, I am. I remember going back there in 1990 when it opened, because it was built on a landfill site, and you used to get fridges appearing in the rough.
Rusty and bikes and all that.
And Volkswagen bonnets, as the course settled. No, I've always been a fan of Paris National, and now it's matured, obviously, because everything's grown in and it's been tinkered with a bit. The Ryder Cup, but I like the fact it's later in the year. It was greener, longer.
Do you prefer it like that?
I do. Yeah, unless obviously, when you build a golf course like that, you have to put a clay cap on it. So if it rained, it can be very soggy. But I thought the golf course looked brilliant, better for the time of the year it was played, which is going to be its new slot, I believe.
I must say I like it when it's bouncing.
Running.
Yeah, and it's more. It looks linksy when you look at it when it's sort of playing more like a links.
Yeah, but it's not a links, is it?
It's not a links, no, but it has got links aspects to it. Rolling fairways,
yes.
High fescues.
Yes. Well, it's links aspect because it's very firm ground when it's dry because of the clay cap on it. But I thought it looked majestic, green as it should be.
Well, it was a majestic win at the Amundi Open de France for Nicholas Coulsarts. It's his first win, can you believe, in 7 years. And Le Golf National did live up to its reputation on the closing day in Paris. It's just a tough test when it's playing long like that. The big hit in Belgium entered Sunday with a 3-shot lead. That evaporated. He went behind and he had to dig really deep to come out on top. And, well, for him, Matt, it's been a long time coming.
It has, yeah. And it's a strange one with him because, of course, this is the sort of the second comeback for him of sorts. He was the big superstar at the start of this century when he was very young when he got his tour card, came on, flashed briefly, disappeared for a while. I was actually at Q School in 2006, I think. I interrupted a holiday in San Rocco to go for a day to Q School before I even did.
I can hear
job.
The violins now. I can hear the strings. Can you, John?
I took a little wander, and there was Nicholas Coulsarts with his mate on the bag, and I got chatting to them and said, "What's happened to him over the years?" And he said, "I don't know what's happened in the past, whatever it's happened, but he's back." And it was true. I mean, that was the start of his rise back when he went through the Challenge Tour, got back on tour, won again.
It disappeared for a couple of years.
Ryder Cupper.
Yeah, got and caught all the way back, and then he sort of drifted.
The miracle at Medina, he was there.
And everybody expected dramatic things for him that would come after that. But actually, he flattened out. But I think he's now a sort of avuncular figure, isn't he, for the two Thomases, Petersen and Dietrich.
He's definitely the godfather of Belgian golf.
Yes.
He is. He's got past Flory Van Donk, and he's the man. Yeah. Nicholas Coulsarts is the man. And they look up to him, respect him, because he was a trailblazer for them, really, in the modern era.
Precisely, yeah. Yeah, the biggest news in Belgium since Hercule Poirot, certainly.
Very good. Well worked out. George Casilla led by two with six to play, and it did look at that point that he might be the champion.
Yeah, and then, of course, Coulsarts birdies 13, which is played havoc all week, dogleg from left to right. Sometimes I get that mixed up. How that hole's changed over the years with the water. And then he chips in for an eagle at 14, which was absolutely enormous. And then Coetzee, after Coulsarts had hit off 15, hit it in the water. So you'd have thought, game over. But 15, I mean, I once took 17 at 15.
But Jochen B. Hansen, while that was going on, double bogeys were flying. All of a sudden, he looked like the man.
But he had a nightmare, didn't he? On the Saturday, took 9 somewhere or something.
Yes, on 13.
Now that is a score to. I can see it on 15 because I nearly ran out of balls there. Anyway, that's another story. But Hansen, of course, won the Challenge Tour Order of Merit last year. and has had been showing form of late.
Yeah, he has. It wouldn't have been a shock if he'd have won.
No, it wouldn't have been a shock. But I suppose there'll be a few scratching the head, but 15 played its part. So Coetzee takes 7 there, water off the tee, and then Coulthard with his second shot finds water, spins it back in. So 7 and 6, 5 shots gone.
He got a break with the tee shot, to be honest.
Yes, he did.
Coulthard, to stay dry.
And then you thought, right on the edge.
You thought, that's the break that gets him over the line. Then he hits it left and sucks it back in the water, and then it was a horror story.
Yeah, that 15th, though, is very intimidating. I mean, I played it when it's dry. I mean, it's so firm that fairway can
run. Something you've ever managed or tried several times?
No, I've tried a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, tried an awful lot. But you wouldn't think you'd increase your lead, would you, taking double bogey?
No. How good, though, Matt, is the finish, the final four holes there? Because everyone talked about the Ryder Cup. Whoa, if the matches get over that hill on as they walk to the 15th tee, it's all there before you. It's an amazing-looking thing.
Yeah, tremendous. There's just everywhere you look, that there are problems. And also you've got the added pressure. That, I mean, it wasn't so much a case this weekend, but the crowds just accumulate around there. I also quite like the fact that 17 almost takes you away from the sort of the high voltage pressure. You just sort of drift away a little bit before you're sucked back into it down 18.
18's one of the best finishing holes in the world for me.
It is as a par 4.
It used
to be a par 5.
It was still smelly.
When it was a par 5, it was happy days. You could reach it in two. You know, if you lobbed it over the water and hit what is a big target, the green.
It is.
A big green, you're thinking.
Not in the fairway, though.
On the tee box, you're thinking 4 when it's a par 5. And when it's a par 4 from the same tee box, you're not thinking 4. how bizarre is that?
Well, that's one of the great things about golf is this business of whether a hole is a par 4 or a par 5. It impacts on so many different things.
But it shouldn't make any difference.
Oh, it shouldn't.
No.
But it even impacts down to simple things like if you're short of the green in 2 shots and you chip up to 7 feet, if it's a par 5, you're thinking, oh, 7 feet for birdie, great. If you're thinking it's a par 4, oh, 7 feet for par, you start to panic. Those are the little subtleties that really matter.
Good job
in this
you didn't turn pro.
But then you have guys who are good at par putting from 7 feet. And not good at birdie putting.
Correct.
And the other way around.
Yes. Correct.
Guys that make a lot of birdies for 7 feet, when they got it for par, not so good. Mm-hmm. It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very strange. It's a... Oh, I was going to need to
swear. Won't affect us again, Rob.
I was going to swear that wouldn't have been good. But it's a mind mud melee horrible thing to try and figure this game of golf out.
Oh, never be done.
No, it's very difficult. Jochen B. Henson, as I said, did have a great chance and then he messed up at the end. So how hard was it for Coulthard to absorb the double at 15 and still finish nicely like he did?
Well, he did. He did say that he got a bit of a shock when he actually approached 17 and suddenly discovered that things weren't as bad as he expected because Henson had had the 6 ahead of him. So suddenly that gave him a bit of relief. But all the same, he's still going to know that there's all these problems around and he's just hitting to the same bit of land, more or less, that he's just had difficulty with and put water on 16, because 16 and 18 are right bang next to each other. And so the fact that he hit a beautiful drive into the middle of the fairway and then a great shot into the middle of the green, that says a lot about his composure right at the end.
Did you like the closely cut slopes around that 17th green?
I did.
Yeah?
I'm a big fan of that.
Me too, the big roll-offs, I like
it. What I couldn't believe was Coetzee putted from short to 17 in regulation play.
Yeah.
Up that bank. I mean, he made a really good job of it, but I couldn't see that at all. But he might, it suggests that he might be a little bit tricky off moist lies with a bit of loft.
If you're not sure when you're chipping on in lies like that, tight cut grass and it's a bit damp, if you're not sure...
And it was cut against him as well.
You're probably better getting the old bread and butter out.
Well, you are. It was cut against him. If you get it a hair wrong, you know, you could soon take a fillet steak out.
Except, of course, that's what led to JB Hansen tripping up, because he was short of the green in 2. And four-putted, put his first putt over the back of the green, struggled.
The finest was Hunter Mahon at Celtic Manor against McDowell when he nearly held the divot. And
on
barely
the 17th.
Oh, I was right there.
But again, Hunter's never been the most blessed person with a wedge in his hand. There's one where you play to your strengths. His strength was not to chip it.
No,
just
absolutely
it.
Not.
It was
melting left wrist.
It was an amazing
pressure, though,
error
that's what
of
it
judgment.
Does
But you've got a caddy there, you've got a captain there. It's just an amazing error of judgment to do what he did there.
Yeah.
Extraordinary, really. But, you know, you've got to have the presence of mind and the clarity of thought at the time to make sure you do the right thing.
There are a lot of good players who are bad chippers, as you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of average chippers. I mean, Ross Fisher is not his favourite thing
to do. Westy never used to be that good.
Lee Westwood's had his chipping issues. Rafa Cabrera Bay, you wouldn't say, is the best, most natural, even though he's Spanish, chipper or pitcher around. He's getting better.
No.
But, yeah, there's trouble is, if you've got a game that's on its day, so good from tee to green, you actually end up chipping very little.
Mm. Yeah.
And you also notice things like Keimer, where he won his US Open at Pinehurst, and his best links performances have been in the old course.
Well, at Pinehurst, he out-putted the tournament from off the green. Mm. I mean, he was putting from 10, 20 yards off the green and two-putting the whole time.
And not needing to chip because it was so firm.
Yeah. And almost using the banks of bunkers to turn the ball if he had to and stuff like that. He was, eight-shot win. Mm. It was incredible.
That's a lot.
Pinehurst number two. Oh, he killed the field. Keimer, he's a brilliant player. But you're right, it's not everyone's favourite thing. And when, then on top of the normal grass, it gets damp, that is...
Yeah.
Even a good chipper can duff a chip.
Oh, yes. Got previous.
Can't you, John?
Yes.
That's right. French Open, new position in the schedule. Yeah. You were saying that you like it?
Massive fan of it.
Because you like a longer Le Golf National?
I think the golf course is better for being softer. I like the schedule with the BMW PGA Championship as well, because that time of the year, that's when grass is at its best, is in September, because a little bit damp in the morning, then warm sunshine. Same with Paris National, although it had quite a bit of rain prior to the event. But the colour of it and the definition of it was just awesome.
The only thing I'd say is I think it felt a little bit diminished this year, because last year, of course, it peaked for the Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
We know that the Open de France was a big money tournament. It got big reputation. It was part of that sort of swing into the Open. It led us into the sort of link swing in Scotland and Ireland. Now it feels a little bit aside.
And it was a Rolex event, and now it's not. So yeah. the money has dropped. But make no mistake, amongst the players, it would be one course they would want to go to throughout the season and play it. Okay, what was the purse? 2 million? I think it was 2 million.
Well, 1.5, I think.
Still very nice to check if it arrived this morning, Nicholas.
And a great, it's a great old title as well, 1906.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
First French Open, 1906.
When I saw the trophy, when I was doing the highlights.
Your birth year.
That's right. That trophy is iconic, beautiful thing. And to get your hands on it, which you never did, Robert, I'm sure is fantastic.
Worth mentioning, Kurt Kitayama playing well again. An early quad for him, a 7 at the second. I reckon you could play that golf course, teeing off at the first, not really hit a bad shot and be stood in the third tee, 4 over.
And I tell you the strange thing with Kurt Kitayama, when he won the Oman Open, he got an 8 on a par 4 in his third round. So he's got a sort of weird habit of just throwing horrible scores onto a scorecard and still contending in a tournament.
Donaldson took 8 on Sunday at the second.
It was playing up as a tee up, wasn't it, as well?
Right-hand trap and then get in the water, which was unfortunate.
What, macked the knife from the trap?
No, he didn't. It just came out with a touch of overspin rather than underspin.
Another little point about Kurt Kitayama is he's won in Mauritius when it was windy.
Yeah.
He won Oman. That was very blustery. It wasn't so much the case later on last week, but it was blustery again. It was very different because it was cold compared to the warmth of those other two. But he's worth bearing in mind if you ever see windy conditions.
Now, if this two wins, he's not going to win Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
Robert McIntyre, no wins, is going to win Rookie of the Year, I would imagine.
Well, at the moment, it depends. He's going to win it because of his position in the race to Dubai. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying at the moment, because McIntyre sat at 7th, and I think Kitayama's about 12th or 13th, but nevertheless, he's had two wins.
To play for.
There's a lot to play for, but he's had two wins and he's not leading. That's extraordinary.
Do you know what? It depends where you finish second.
Correct.
And it depends what you win.
Yes.
Well, McIntyre's finishing the Open for one.
Yeah.
Huge events, huge money. Huge ranking
points.
He's
at 3 or 4 second places, isn't he, McIntyre?
Yeah, yeah. So, he should have won by now, and he will win.
Yeah, he's going to win, there's no doubt.
No question.
I really like watching him play, I must say.
He gives it large.
Yeah, he's powerful.
But it's not only the fact that he hits it a long way, he also knows how to shape the ball.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of the modern in him, in that he can hit it a long way, and the old-fashioned in that he can shape it.
I think the obsession with shaping the ball is just ridiculous.
What, of doing it?
I can shift it both ways. I can hit it high.
It's not easy with that modern ball.
I think it's so overplayed, honestly.
Yeah, I agree.
Honest, if you're a fader, 90% of the time you're going to fade shots. You only draw it when you absolutely have to. You play with your stock shot. And same the other way around.
That's quite interesting. I quite like that, because I sometimes think there's quite a lot of pomposity discussed.
Absolutely.
When we discuss links golf. I remember a few years ago, and Mickelson was preparing a lob shot. And it was almost treated as if he was sort of morally degenerate for having the nerve to take a lob shot. And he actually went and stiffed it, stone dead. And that was the year that he won the Scottish Open and then won the Open at Muirfield.
Yeah. Well, Phil's made a career out of hitting, I would call them YouTube shots. Picks the most complicated shot because he can play it, but it's not the percentage shot.
No, I agree.
And sometimes he comes unstuck. He tries to show off.
And there's a sense that he's big in overthinking things ahead of a week, I think.
I think we should speak to Nicholas Coulthard. That's what I think.
Oh,
we should
I do too.
Yeah, he's poised and ready at the end of the phone. Let's find out if he's there. How are you, mate?
Yeah, well, as you can imagine, pretty good, eh?
I would think a little fuzzy in the head this morning, hopefully.
Yeah, I didn't really have time for big, big celebrations because I got home really, really late last night.
Right.
But the other half had done the celebration before me, so
oh, that's good.
Someone did it.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, you must have enjoyed that.
Yeah, as you can imagine, I'm over the moon, you know, winning the French Open, winning after 7 years. Had a couple of really close goals in big events, but to do it at a tournament that's loaded with history, the oldest on the continent, being French-speaking, living almost in France, being in Monaco, makes it even better.
You know, last month I was wandering around the range on a Wednesday afternoon at the PGA at the BMW PGA at Wentworth, and I bumped into you on the range and I said, you know, what's happening? And you said, you know, I'm actually playing pretty well, but I'm just not stringing it together. It's just for some reason a little bit off or what have you. You were right.
You know, when you play on tour for so long, you're going to have periods where things don't really go in your favor. I felt like, and you're not the only person I talked to, I bumped into Andrew Coulthard a couple of weeks ago at Dunhill, and we basically had the same chat that you and I had. And I felt 80% of the time my game was actually good enough to do decent results. But for whatever reason, I was maybe trying to push too hard or expecting a bit too much out of some weeks, and I would shoot myself in the foot and have a terrible 6-hole stretch or 8-hole stretch where I would basically blew away my chance of putting a decent result. So it was very frustrating, but you know, you have to keep faith, and as long as you keep moving forward and keep belief in yourself, good things can happen.
Nicholas, given that you've just like said you had those little spells of poor scoring, could you have imagined that the place where you actually did make the breakthrough was at Paris Nationale?
Well, in a way, yes and no. Before the week, having, you know, being in the corner, being pushed in the corner by having to play good in the last two events to keep my card at Paris Nationale was a bit daunting because it's a very difficult golf course. But on the other hand, it's a golf course that requires your attention 100% of the time. It's a long fight. I've always compared playing the French Open at the National like the US Open. It's not a tournament or a course where somebody is going to go away with it and never to be seen again. So there was always going to be a chance that if you put, you know, 2-3 rounds together to be somewhere good, to be near the top like I did. I wasn't really expecting that, don't get me wrong, but when I started to play well coming, Saturday was a big day for me. Saturday was the day where I made a statement that I was going to be there till the end of the week.
I think actually you did a post-round interview that I thought was quite interesting because you were prompted to talk about the thrill of the prospect of winning and the thrill of the prospect of saving your card. But you actually mentioned that the challenge of the course was the primary task ahead of you. Did you kind of use that to distract yourself from those two other targets?
It was my main mission. My main mission was the course and me. If I deal and manage my emotions throughout the week, feeling that I was actually striking the ball good enough and the experience that I have around this golf course was going to get me through the week, you know, without any big scars. But I didn't really think about winning this tournament before the end of Saturday. That's where things started to go a bit more bubbly in my mind and maybe got me thinking a bit too far ahead. But I think I kept my emotions pretty much in check on Sunday because a lot of things that happened. I built the lead and then I lost it pretty quickly and then George got on the run and then the scenario at the end, it was just a roller coaster ride of emotion that needed to be kept in check to go all the way.
When you doubled 15, Nicholas, what did you say to yourself?
Oh, what an idiot.
Or something like that.
Oh, even worse. Like, I hit this tee shot pretty close to the water hazard already. George hits it further right than I do. Like, I mean, it's probably the worst shot that he's hit in on the weekend. So I don't know what's going on at the front. I have no idea where JB Anson hit. So I'm only sort of paying attention to Georgie in a way. And it's a matter of like, all I'm trying to do is hit this thing 20 paces left of the flag, and there and then start to bring the left-hand side of the green in play, which I have never hit a ball in the water on the left side of the green in the water. Everybody's hit it in the water right, especially with the wind into the face of a downhill lie. But left, I couldn't believe I hit it so far left.
Standing on that 16th tee after the double at 15, did you then have a look around, or did you have any inkling as to what was happening up top in front?
No, I had a look when I got onto 16th green, and then JB is at the front. He's one ahead of us, or one ahead of me, and I do a pretty good two-putt on 16. After having a good look at what Jamie Donaldson's putt was doing, I think that if JD hadn't put before me, I maybe wouldn't have played that much break and maybe wouldn't have done a two-putt that easily. So that was a good omen. And then playing 17, I'm still thinking I'm one behind. And when I had a pretty good yardage for the second shot and bailed right, I wasn't particularly happy with that shot because I had my high straight down the pipe. And I got to the green and had the surprise to see that JB had doubled. So all of a sudden you go from having to chase to being one ahead with still a pretty long, slick, maybe 30, 40 footer and 18 to play. So then the emotions start to change again. So I needed to, all you need is four down the last, but that's an easy thing to say when we know how much drama the 18 that the National has proven over the years.
So there are two Nicholas Coulthards. There's the one that we don't see from week to week, who's kind of disappeared somewhere. And there's this guy that we saw yesterday. Another win. How do we keep this guy going for longer?
That's a good question, Robert. I'd like to see this guy go up a bit more often as well. You know, I think it would save a lot of stress to my entourage, my wife, my family, my parents, even my friends. Most of the people that I've had on the phone for the last 12 hours have told me that they've aged 20 years in the stretch of a couple hours. So for my own sake as well, I think it would be a bit more peaceful if this guy that plays last group on Sundays could show up a bit more often.
Listen, Nicholas, we were all thrilled for you. It was nervy for everyone coming down. I mean, the last four holes of a tournament is difficult anyway, but the last four holes at Le Golf National, where there's water everywhere and, you know, one stray thought somewhere can cost you the tournament, to hang on like you did and play the last hole so beautifully, it was a sensational win. And we on the Race to the Bye show were just thrilled for you. And may this be now, like you want it to be, the stepping stone to the real Nicholas Coulthards.
Let's hope so. I mean, like I said before, I'm overwhelmed by the amount of messages that I've received from so many different horizons of people. You know, players, Lee Westwood tweeted, Thomas Bjorn texted me. I have so many people that I would like to have on the phone. I mean, I'm trying to respond to everyone right now. Trust me, I have a sore thumb already. But I'm very grateful to see how many marks of affection I've received in the last 12 hours.
I think that's a testament to the type of bloke you are, Nicholas. So listen, well played. Great win. And we're looking forward to seeing what you produce in the big events that are just around the corner.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the next couple of weeks as well. You know, all of a sudden, you get to play new events, big events, and can finally plan next season a bit more peacefully than I have played the last couple of months. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Brilliant stuff, Nicholas. Thank you for coming on the show. We'll talk to you soon.
Nice to talk to you all. Thank you very much.
Well, the victory is Coulthards' third on the European Tour, but his first since 2012, the season he was part of the miracle at Medina, as Europe came from 10-4 behind, actually 10-6 going into the singles, wasn't it?
Yes.
To win the Ryder Cup. The 36-year-old had entered the week in a fight to keep his card. He ended a victory drought of 7 years and 5 months in his 389th European Tour appearance. Now for the rest of the leaderboard, it was second place for Denmark's Jochen B. Hansen, and we caught up with him at the end of that dramatic final round.
Really got to feel how it is to play for European Tour tournament inside me. So the screw up on 17, unfortunately, that cost me a chance this week, fortunately. So disappointed now, but also pretty proud of my game today.
I mean, aside from the 70, you must be extremely proud of the way you come from five shots back at the start of the day to battle yourself right into contention. Just how much is the mental side an aspect of that?
a lot. I mean, I've been playing well for 3 weeks now and put myself in good positions. So getting really close this week was really nice, but just also really, really want that win, you know.
And overall, happy with the week?
Yeah, great week. Lovely here in France. Loved it. The course is spectacular. Loved to playing it.
I was really hoping that the last question was, will you be going to Portugal next week? And he would have said, I'll be back. I thought he sounded like the Terminator.
Well, I didn't.
You didn't? Yes, you did, because you're lying. Your lips are curling. Yes, you did. You're just not giving me the tick.
Yes, he was a little bit like
that. Yes,
but I can
tell
you,
a bit of a Terminator on the golf course. I think once he gets his first win, he's not going to look back.
He's been around a while, you know, and struggled to establish himself. Then he won the Challenge Tour rankings last year, which is huge, obviously, for your confidence. And he's had some great results. He said he's been playing well the last 3 weeks. Have you watched him hit it?
He gives it a rip.
Yeah, but he's a good striker. He's a good
striker.
Well,
that's what that means.
Yeah, I know that, Robert. Thank you.
Step in, Matt, will you? Anytime you're ready.
Yeah, he's, John's right. He this was his best performance on the European Tour, bettered third at the Scottish Open in 2013. But the thing that's always held him back is he's a real birdie machine. He really flings the birdies and eagles at the scorecard, but he has these holes where he goes AWOL for a bit.
Yeah.
And it really, really sets him back. If he can just cut that, he's definitely got a bright future.
And I think in my head this is right, that he at Sun City hold a 3-iron, that par 5 on the back nine with the love grass in front of it. I don't know if it's 13, 14.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And I think he hold a 3-iron for an albatross there, playing the Ned Bank.
I can't help you out with that one.
Struggling to remember that.
Yeah, I think Jochen B. Hansen.
What's your point?
Well, A, it's long hitting to hit a drive and lob a 3-iron on that green. Never mind, hold it. I'm sure he's had an albatross too there. But a really, really good player and swings it very well. I think what you say is right. I think once he just gets the knack of maxing out what he's doing on the golf course, it's going to be an upward trend, a very sharp upward trend.
Denmark have produced some incredible players when you think of the size of the country.
Yeah, and they have. Beergaard's out there right now.
Beergaard, and they've also got these two brothers, the Hogard brothers, who are did great things on the amateur game, and they're just making first steps.
Yeah,
on this tour and the Challenge Tour this year.
It's amazing, but when you think back to when we were playing in the early 90s, the federations put the money into teams like the Germans, the Italians, the French and so on. They reap the rewards of it now, invested way back to try and produce players, which they've been doing for a long time, beyond back to, you know, mid-90s.
OK, let's get a quick word from the man who looked at one stage like he'd be taking the trophy home but ultimately finished third, George Kutsia.
I was quite happy with the way I played today. Just one bad hole. If you take it out, then it's back in the mix. But, very happy for Nico. He played really well, kept his head. I know it means a lot to him, so really happy for him.
You say one bad hole. It seemed like that was happening a lot throughout the field. What were the conditions out there like today?
That's why I don't feel that bad about it, because that is one of those holes that you can make a number, and I made my number. But, you just got to get over it and try and make birdies after that.
How proud of you, the mental aspect of your game, to remain calm and just keep battling through a day like this?
Yeah, maybe tomorrow I'll say. Yeah, I'm feeling good about it, but at the moment not that great. But yeah, I feel like for 17 holes I really kept my head quite nicely. No, I'm quite happy. It's obviously not the result I wanted in the end, but I'll take it.
He got his feet wet on the ninth, didn't he?
Yes.
Kutsia hooked his tee shot left.
And still made four.
Potted
again up the bank.
Yes, up the bank, didn't chip and hold it.
I find that slightly strange. Off a side bank, because the grass would be across you rather than into you.
Did he hold it?
He held it, yes. But it was a strange choice, I felt.
Again, it goes down to how you're feeling at the time, you know.
Putting, anyway.
Fantastic four. And, you know, that's a really good break. I know he didn't have a good break at the end, but that's a really good break.
Yes. The other strange thing about him is he had that disaster on 15 in the final round, but he also had a double bogey 6 at the 13th on Saturday.
Mm.
So, it's one of these strange things last week. We're watching all these guys, Hansen, Kutsir, Kolsarts, all having big numbers.
Mm.
And they're at the top of the board. It makes you wonder what the rest were doing. But we never even saw all the drama that they
were getting. Well, maybe they've obviously had the numbers that everyone else has had, but they've had the whole run of birdies that the others haven't had. I mean, there are birdie holes around that golf course, but there's a handful, maybe half a dozen, where if you can play them in par, you then got a great chance of having a good score.
His tee shot off 13, though, on Saturday. It was left long, long wet. I mean, I don't know how he hit it there. There's no trees really to bounce off. And then he dropped on a wet lie and then carted it right into the hazard again. I mean, it is an intimidating tee shot, but he'd hit it off the map there, off the tee.
Yes.
And he hit it off the map yesterday on 15 with a 9, pitched 25 yards into the water. I'm sorry, that is a long way right.
It is, yeah. Well, on that 13th on Saturday, he was miles left on 13 and then miles right on 14. Yeah. It was the distance between those two shots must have been enormous.
He looked strange through impact.
Overcorrection, isn't it? I mean, that's one of golf's classic things. Mm. You know it's going to go left and you go, oh, I'll give it up. This won't go left. Watch this. Whoosh. 100 yards right. We should mention Marcel Siem, who disqualified himself in the first round of this event after having 10 penalty strokes.
Preferring his lie when it wasn't preferred lies. Very unfortunate. But I have to say, what was the caddy doing?
It's a strange one in the first round.
Yes.
That you suddenly...
Because you wouldn't play preferred lies in the Pro-Am.
Well, if it round two and they changed it, you can kind of get it. But starting the tournament, surely everyone knows what the rules are.
Yeah, well, you'd have thought... The caddy should be fully aware of that. That's part of his job. Mistakes are made.
I know.
It's an expensive one, though. Because he's no playing privileges full-time.
And also a week of strange ruling mistakes. On the senior LPGA championship, Leanne Walker took 127 shots because she wasn't aware that she's no longer allowed to be lined up by her caddy.
I find it incredible because this rule's been in ages.
Yes. 127, was that
127.
Right? 127.
That's a good total for 36 holes.
Well, it's very nicely done, actually. Mm. Very nicely done. Now, with only one event of the regular season left, we are getting down to crunch time for players trying to avoid the Q school. John, what's that like?
Well, you've got to make top 117 this year. That is the cut-off point that they are saying. So basically, on the money list, if you are outside that, or you're 117th, you will be playing a full schedule next year. And guys like, who's in that area, which I find amazing? Lee Slattery, Paul Dunn. I haven't got the full money list with me, but there's a lot of players who, if they don't finish in that top 117, will have to go back to the tour school and may have to go back to the challenge tour. So it's a real shock to the system. You know, when you think Dunn, didn't he win the British Masters up at close house?
Yeah, a brilliant chip at the last hole.
Yeah, and then for about 6 months, he was very strong, racking up the top tens.
But it's amazing how many guys disappear. You know, Michael Howe, 5 wins on tour, hasn't had a card now for a couple of years. Matteo Manassero, don't know whether he's still exempt at the end of this year, but when you think he'd won four events
very quickly
by the age of 21, extraordinary how your career can change. So,
but it's a fine line.
It is, and increasingly, since the Rolex series offers huge opportunities, if you can finish top 5 there, that is magnificent. There are players who are sort of picking up one of them a year, and they're getting a card with that. But also, if you're getting top 5s in the wrong places, which a few of these guys are doing, they just don't pick up the same number of points.
Well, back to Kitayama, you know, he's had 2 wins. He's not Rookie of the Year at the moment because McIntyre has played...
Depends how you judge it, doesn't it?
...very well in big events.
How do you judge it?
Well,
do you give it to the guys won twice? Or do you give it to the guys highest up the race to Dubai?
You give it to the guys highest up the race to Dubai. That's all you can do. I mean, you could win a couple of smaller events, which he has done. But if you look at McIntyre's finishes in strong, tough fields... You would have to say they're better. He would love the wins, but he hasn't won yet. Anyway, back to that 117 nightmare this week for people in Portugal. You'll see it etched all over the faces, and somebody will come through. It's happened with Tom Lewis at St Andrews. It happened with McIlroy, didn't it? McIlroy got his card at St Andrews 1 year off limited starts to avoid
that's
all that.
That's
I know, but he still did it.
That's not the same thing.
Not the same thing.
No, thank you.
But he card.
So. It's not the same thing. Let's talk about guys who are trying to keep their card at the last event of the year.
So here's a good example. Eddie Pepperell, a few years ago, he had a very good first round, needed to make the cut, make some money, and he had a massive blowout on the Friday, didn't make the cut.
Tommy Fleetwood had to do it.
Yes, he did.
In South Africa. Like, finished top 10 or something to keep his card, and he did it and never looked back.
1 year, do you remember Robert Rock topped it off the last in Madrid, and he had to make 4 at the last to keep his card? So it's happened right through... golf in history, and it's going to happen to somebody out in Portugal this week, and somebody's going to miss by one, which is just going to be brutal.
And the other amazing thing is, remember Graham Storm a few years ago? He came to the final green, needed to 2-putt a 72nd green to make his card.
Yep.
A couple of months later, he wins the South African Open, and his career's completely transformed.
But wasn't his card situation, even that... there was something that happened with that. Somebody dropped out, or there was an issue with the race to Dubai or something.
Yes, so
he got a massive break in the first place.
Yes,
because that's what gave him the confidence to go on and win shortly afterwards.
Yes.
He thought he was done.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that's true.
I think it was the case of one of the, an American not taking up his membership and therefore dropping out of the rankings.
It might have been Patrick Reed.
They dropped one more spot.
Yeah.
It might have been Patrick Reed.
Yeah, it could have been.
Anyway, there'll be some stories this week in Portugal and there'll be a lot of tears.
There will. It's not very nice. Johnny, give us the top 10 from the Open de France.
Right, well, great to see Nicolas Colsarts won the event in the end by one shot after a seven-year drought. From Joachim B. Hansen in second place. Third, George Coetzee. Fourth, Kurt Kitayama, we mentioned, has won twice this year. Fifth, better from Martin Keimer, who hasn't won for a long time. Gavin Moynihan, who won the Sixes a couple of years ago for the Irish, he just below Keimer. Then Richie Ramsey, another good week. Eighth tied Thomas...
He won it with Paul Dunn, by the way, worth mentioning.
Yes, he did. He won it with Paul Dunn. Anyway, eighth tied Thomas Detry, Hugo Leon and Chris Paisley make up the top ten.
Last week's predictions. It's getting very close, but we're coming towards the end. I shall get to the grand totals in a minute. The format is you get two picks every week, presenter, and guest, and we keep our totals running for the whole season. So you have to pick anyone that you think you want to win, anyone from last year's Race to Dubai, but outside the top 50 in 2018. So you get two picks. Paul Eales went for, by the way, 20 points for a win, 10 for a top 5, 5 for top 20, minus 5 for an MC, a miscut. Paul Eales went for Eric Van Rooyen, miscut, minus 5. Matthias Schwab, miscut, minus 5. So minus 10 for Paul Eales from your neck of the woods. Richard Kaufman went for Joost Luiten, who finished 11th, 5 points, and Roman Langask, who finished 18th, 5 points. So he got 10 points. And I went for Ross Fisher, who missed the cut, minus 5, and Michael Lorenzo Vera, who didn't even start because he WD'd, so 0 points. I'm minus 5. Overall, the presenters are down to 170, and the co-presenters and guests are tied at 140 apiece, Matt. So you've got a monster, monster chance this week to really change how it all looks.
A big week as we head into the big money events as well.
That's right. Now, in the fancy race to Dubai again, Lee Finley is still the global leader. Philippe Beckmann got the most points from the Open de France with the top three in all his team of six. And Colsarts as captain. I mean, what a pick that is.
Mm.
He's put six players in there. He's got the top three. And he had Colsarts as the captain who
outrageous.
Won.
There's always the possibility that he forgot to put his team in and he got a random six names. I often, there was somebody who
picked... The auto pick.
Yes.
Which is never good.
Do you remember somebody picked Guido Migliozzi to win the Kenyan Open?
And no.
I thought, who on earth could... That could only have been Guido's best friend or something. And then I twigged it was probably an auto pick. I apologise to Philip.
Conspiracy theories about
If Philip picked those three, well done. But it's always the possibility. But
Matt doesn't believe you, Phil, so don't worry about that. If you want to get involved, you can by heading to europeantour.com and registering your team. However, the year is coming to a close. Top 10, please, Matt, in the Race to Dubai.
Doing it in reverse order. Number 10, he didn't play last time. He's entered. Christian Bezuidenhout. Number 9, Danny Willett. Number 8, Eric Van Rooyen. Number 7, Robert McIntyre. I've been saying a few words about him. Number 6, Tommy Fleetwood. Number 5, Matt Wallace. Number 4, another Englishman, Matt Fitzpatrick. Open champion Shane Lowry is number 3. John Rahm of Spain, number 2. And still at the top, Bernd Wiesberger of Austria.
Now on the challenge to a friend, Francesco Laporta shot to the top of the Road to Mallorca rankings after securing his first European Challenge Tour victory at the Hainan Open. The Italian began the day with a 2-stroke lead and the final round of 70, 2 under par, was enough to clinch victory at 14 under par, 1 stroke clear of France's Robin Roussel. If you win on the Challenge Tour, Johnny, how validated is that? Does that mean you can win the main tour?
Yeah, I would say. It's a great benchmark, the Challenge Tour, because it's 4 rounds every week, highly competitive, and of course you can gain your card through the Challenge Tour, but if you've been out all season week in, week out, or playing 20 events and you're up against these lads, if you look historically at the guys that come off the Challenge Tour, how they do on the main tour against the guys that come out the tour school,
those guys or the other guys,
the guys off the Challenge
Tour,
they do a lot better, and I think it's a great place to ply your trade and learn. And yeah, they can win when they come out.
Now you would know this, Matt, the answer to this. Can you bet on the Challenge Tour?
Yes.
So smart money would have been on Laporta because he finished top Italian the week before on the main tour, the Rolex Series event.
Yeah, quite possibly. Although it's a very, very difficult tour to try and predict. I found it the most difficult of the lot. I think there's an interesting little dynamic in the people who do come up from the Challenge Tour. Sometimes it's it's very obvious. Somebody like Brooks Koepka has won frequently on the Challenge Tour, comes to the next level and continues to win.
Sure.
You get other people like Ben Hebert. He's won three times, twice on the Challenge Tour, and he's still looking for his first win on the European Tour.
But he's top 20 of the Race to Dubai
now. Oh, he's very, very good,
so
yeah.
He's a good player.
But then you also get people like Brandon Grace and Eric Van Ruin, who never really actually hit first gear on Challenge Tour,
yeah.
But they have hit the European Tour running, both of them.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. People knew they were good on the Challenge Tour, even though they didn't win.
Justin Thomas has won the CJ Cup again. He won it a couple of years ago. He just pipped Danny Lee. Thomas posted a 67 in the final round at Nine Bridges to finish 20 under par and win the event for the second time in 3 years, as I said. 69 for the New Zealander was good enough for second. Justin Thomas moves up, and we'll find out in a minute in the world rankings, but he's one of those young bucks that the Americans have that on his given week is very hard to beat.
Yeah, and I also think there's a sense that he's back. And it kicked off actually at the Scottish Open, because from having quite a good Masters, he had to go off and have a bit of an operation, a bit of an injury rehab, didn't play much and didn't play very well until the Scottish Open. I think he finished tied 11th there. Finally made a cut at the Open, which he'd never done. So he was getting in some nice form, won in the FedEx playoffs, did quite well through the end of their season. And I think with that win, he's definitely back.
Yeah, he is. A little bit of news. Francesco Molinari has confirmed he's going to have Justin Rose's old caddy, I assume they mean Fuch, on the bag after ending his four-year partnership with
Peyo Iguarian.
Yeah, he's Spanish, isn't he?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So his team is going to be changed, because he talks about his team all the time, Francesco,
yes.
And his caddy will be definitely part of that. So there's a change in personnel.
There was very sort of emotional sort of parting of the ways on Twitter between the two of them.
I love you and I still love you. Oh no, I love you more.
That's quite that. Yes, it's
was a bit like that, was it?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
No, was it? Crikey.
Francesco's got.
I can't believe you're sacking me, you pig.
No, it was nothing like that at all. It was I'll love
it's
you.
It's been
forever.
An honour to work for you, and oh my goodness, you've been the greatest caddy ever. But I'm having a change. He will now have Jason Hempelman on his bag for the remainder of 2019 before teaming up with Fuch in January.
Howler's old caddy.
Yeah, that's Jason. Right, Jason. Yeah, good caddy as well.
Yeah, yeah, nice bloke as well.
Yeah, very nice. A good lad.
A lot of it's how you get on with the with
personality is important.
Of course it is.
Yeah. Top 10 in the world, please,
Top
John.
Top 10 in the world is led by, at the moment, Brooks Koepka from Rory McIlroy in second, Dustin Johnson third, Justin Thomas just won the CJ Cup fourth, John Rahm fifth. He's had a great year. Patrick Cantlay sixth, Justin Rose seventh, Xander Schauffele, for those Scrabble players, is a cracking score in eighth, Bryson DeChambeau and Tiger Woods in tenth. I think that's just magnificent.
Have you got to Wallace Wadwick with every name that begins with R?
No.
Just Rory then. You just saved that for Rory.
I've had a tooth out.
Your way of pronouncing Rory. I've just wondered, you know, it seems to be, it's been a theme, this show.
Well, you know I've had a
it's
tooth
out. It's been a theme.
Out,
you, I know, you told us.
So sometimes it's quite sore.
There we are, you see. Portugal Masters, Dom Pedro Victoria Golf Course. If you hit it a long way, it has to be a massive advantage there.
Yeah, well, Alvaro Quiroz is a past champion there. Arnold Palmer designed course.
Tom Lewis is no slouch up to either, by the way.
But Arnie likes to create golf courses where if you take an aggressive line and hit the right shot, you'll get an advantage.
Tom Lewis, defending champion.
Yeah, changed his life.
What he's just done recently might have changed his life, going to the Corn Ferry final and winning, played one, won one, and now he has a berth on the PGA Tour. That might change his life.
Let's go back to Luton Hoo, where I was at the Challenge Tour last year, and he won that. And he was secured. He secured his card. Then he went to Portugal and won that again, which he won in, I think, 2011. Then he disappeared. Then Corn Ferry Tour wins. He's gone up. He's elevated himself. I mean, I've always admired his swing. I think he is an English Adam Scott with the golf club.
When he won that Corn Ferry event, he honestly, in the final round, I don't know if you watched it, Matt, he played impeccably.
Yes.
He took all the shortcuts. He hit every shot that needed full commitment and played that way. It was super impressive.
Very, very good. I think he shot quite a few Americans as well that week. I mean, they'll have that little memories of him because, of course, he showed up first round of the Open in 2011 when he was still an amateur. So they'll have a few memories of that. But I think his game could be quite a nice suit for certain places in America. I think it could be a big season for him.
I think he's changed as a person as well.
Carry on, John.
Well, I think he's come out a little bit more out of his shell. He was quite reserved and kept himself to himself. And I think with these performances, it's brought him out, and I think he benefit from it.
He's certainly going to enjoy being defending champion here.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got to have a lot of confidence right now.
And not just defending, but a two-time champion here. And he knows he's got a lot of options for next year. So he can take an absolute a free reign at this
point. Some people are tipping him.
Are they now?
They are.
Are they now? What's the outstanding feature of the golf course, John?
Plenty of room.
Right.
Right and left.
So you can open your shoulders.
It's a golf course.
Give it
if you give it a clunk, it can be advantageous to your benefit.
Yeah. Give us a clue, Matt. Who's playing?
Pretty good field this week. Martin Kaymer's there. Padraig Harrington. He's also won here, of course. Matt Wallace, who's got lots of good memories of Portugal. He secured the first of his European Tour titles there, the Open de Portugal, in 2017. Eddie Pepperell, we've already discussed him. Eddie Pepperell, he's had good weeks and bad weeks here, but I know he's very, very fond of the little harbour and the restaurants around there, so that'll put him in good fettle.
You know, Westwood.
Carry on, John. Yeah, give us a few more. Very good.
Paul Lawrie. Bjorn.
See, I like what you're doing. It's very
Robert
good.
Carson won the Race to Dubai in 2008. Alexander Levy is another man who needs a good week this week. He's been changing his swing. I don't know what's happened to him, but he is a much better player than his results.
I think he struggled a little bit when he won the Trophy of San last year.
Right.
And then there was a lot of discussion. He was an outside chance of getting to Paris for the Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
But it was an outside chance. But
yeah,
it meant a lot of people were chatting to him. And I think that kind of got in his head a little bit and kind of knocked him off. But he also did a lot of work changing his swing.
I don't know why these lads do it, you know.
And it's taken him a long time. But
he went to see Pete Cowan, I think.
Yeah, but he's a past champion here as well. I mean, albeit when he won it, I think it was down to two rounds or something. But I think he shot a 62 to win it. So you would imagine this place would suit Alex.
Well, it's a golf course that give you a lot of confidence because there isn't a lot of trouble on it.
Yeah.
You know, you can miss a fairway by 8 and 10 yards and it won't be knee-deep.
Yeah.
It's a resort course.
Yeah. He's an intriguing golfer, Alex Levy, in that he admits one thing that very few golfers will admit. I remember a post-round interview once, he said he prefers courses that allow him just to throw the ball at the pins. Mm. He doesn't like difficult challenges.
Mm.
And of course, it's one of these things, we were discussing earlier about, Robert was talking about shaping the balls, a bit overrated. Everyone always says that a tough challenge, you should admit to liking that sort of thing. And he says, no, I don't like that.
Mm.
I actually quite like it when all I've got to do is hit it at pins.
Mm. And of course, speaks fluent French.
Yeah.
Word perfect, he is.
Really?
Yeah.
An intriguing one with him is he's actually got very strong connections with America.
Yes.
So lives in Florida, I think, spent a lot of time in California. So he was kind of, he actually really, really wanted to play in Paris, obviously because he was French, but also because he's got all these connections with France.
So we've heard about the field, we've heard about the golf course, this is all good. Now we get to our fancy Race to Dubai predictions. And Matt, as the guest, you get to go first. I always go last, of course.
Yeah, and I'm going to go with a Kiwi who's finished tied 18th in the last two performances. And last year, he had a 64 at this course in round three. Ryan Fox, big hitter, can take advantage of those wide fairways.
He's been missing a little bit, hasn't he?
Yeah, but he's started to find stuff in the last couple of weeks.
Things he'd lost, like keys and stuff like that?
Yeah, that's it, yes. Also, I think he'll be watching the All Blacks warming it up in the World
Cup. Before they get beaten.
Maybe so. They might.
Come on, Matt. Be bullish. Come on. Come on.
But
I tell you what, if England play like they played against Australia, they've got a shout.
Oh, they definitely have. And also, can the New Zealanders play to such an incredible level yet again? I mean, possibly they could do, but if they come down a little bit, yes, I agree with you. England have got a good shot. But
isn't it amazing, though? Because things go in cycles. The Kiwis, the All Blacks, they're always the team to beat. Doesn't matter what year you're talking about. You can just talk about, you've got to beat the All Blacks. Simple as that. They never go into a kind of a fallow period where there's inertia and then there's nothing happening and everyone's walking. It just never happens.
No, true. Some people might be wondering why we're allying Fox and the Kiwis. So we should just point out that his father was fly half.
Hard as a dog's head, his dad.
Yep, Grant Fox, one of the greatest fly halves there ever was.
Ryan Fox, by the way, he's... When you talk about boxers, and it's like when he hits a golf ball, that some guys can, their punch is just heavy, and the way Ryan Fox hits the golf ball, it's a heavy contact. There's not that many players that have that, but he's got it.
Yeah,
And that golf ball's compressed and it's squealing to get off the club face.
Similar perhaps to that. Sometimes they talk about fast bowlers who the ball hits the bat really hard, and it's just somehow they have something just special. They don't hit the ball as fast, but when it hits the bat, you hear it.
But Ryan played a few sports when he was younger, and it was his go to thing is just smash it. Mm. And when that's how he started as a youngster, and he still smashes it.
You wouldn't
it.
Want a right hook of him.
No, you certainly wouldn't. And there's no need to upset him, is there?
Well,
you know, play it safe, Johnny. I think, Ryan Fox, you've not upset him so far.
No.
There's still time. Just a reminder of the format. You get 20 points for a win, 10 for top 5, 5 for top 20, minus 5 for a missed cut. That's been the story for the last few seasons now. So, you're going Ryan Fox?
Ryan Fox.
And you're outside the top 50 last year in the Race to Dubai person is?
Oh, it's a slight surprise that he was outside the top 50, but Joost Luiten, he finished second on his debut in this tournament back in 2010. Last time he played it, he did very well, finished tied 12th. And he flew through the weekend last week in Paris. And then
was he on a plane or something?
That's
or?
Right. That one of those
There's
planes.
There's an airport right next to Le Golf National.
You hear it right by the 7th. He was on one of those. No, he plenty of birdies at the weekend and then a double bogey at 18. So he actually slipped down the leaderboard. A few people might have not noticed that. I think he's primed to have a good week.
John Hawksworth.
Tom Lewis, 2-time winner.
And full of confidence, and a golf course that he loves, and correct. Hitting the ball really well, yeah.
And just a class player. And then Joachim B. Hansen, who's just finished second, but been playing well the last 3 weeks. I think he's matured. And a golf course that you can certainly open your shoulders, it gives it a clout. So there would be my two, and you've gone for...
Do you know who I was looking for?
No.
I was looking for last week's winner, and I can't see if he's...
Coltarts?
Yeah.
But I couldn't find him.
I can't. I just want to see if he's there, because I can't find him.
You'd have to, after that, probably have the week off, wouldn't you? No, he's not on there.
Okay. Because I just thought, you know, when you see the way Nicholas yes. plays, a long hitter...
He would have been going, though, because he was another one struggling.
He would have to play there to keep his car, but now, of course, he's in the winner's category. That has all changed. So I'm going to go for, outside the top 50, a man who's slowly but surely coming back to form, Martin Kaymer.
Yes.
From last year's top 50. So he's my second pick, my first pick. We talked about Rookie of the Year. Adrianos is unlucky not to be
pick.
Rookie of the Year because he watched him playing in his National Open, you know, in that final group with Jon Rahm. Mm. Didn't look slightly out of place. He looked really comfortable. And I just really like the cut of his jib, how quickly he played and how kind of positive he was when he played
on
the game.
On the golf course, it's quite tight.
On the golf course, yes, there. And here, he can give it a right old rip.
How was the tee shot at 6 over the Dyer ditch? I've never seen anybody...
In Spain?
I've never seen
halfway anybody, up that upslope.
I've never seen anybody hit
no,
it.
No, it's ridiculous.
You used to hit it down there and hit 5-iron in. Do you remember?
Yes, I do.
Yes.
Yeah. He carried the ditch, carried the corner. It was incredible.
That
yeah.
is a ridiculous tee shot.
Yeah. He's special, right?
He's Larry Long.
He's not. He's Adrianos. Mm. I mean, Larry Long's 2 L's and Adrianos is 2 A's. And we're going to go with the A's. Adrianos. That's it for now. Remember, you can stay up to date with the latest news via europeantour.com and the official European Tour app, as well as Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Next week, we will have a full review of the Portugal Masters. Plus, we'll look ahead to the WGC HSBC Champions in Shanghai. That will be through the night if you're here in Europe. I should know because I'll be doing it. But for now, from Matt Cooper.
Goodbye.
Who's gone for?
Ryan Fox and Joost Luiten.
Good trawling. John Hawksworth, who's gone for?
Tom Lewis and JB Hansen.
And myself, Robert Lee, has gone for Martin Kaymer and Adrianos. We'll see you next week.